morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. Today we're going to be talking about cruising the ICW through South Carolina, and my guest is Larry Dorminey. He is the senior editor of the Salty Southeast Cruisers Net, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. But before we officially get started, I'd like to take a second and recognize and also thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passagemaker Trawler Fest, Waterway Guide Media, and we encourage all of our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with that, I'd like to say good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Where would you like to start?
Well, before we begin, I just wanted to offer kudos to your organization and to the Seven Seas Cruising Association and Waterway Guide for all the effort that you have put into protecting the anchoring rights in Florida. That work that you did has just been terrific, and certainly we keep our fingers crossed that it's going to work out to the advantage of all involved. But
yeah,
I was
so
impressed.
We've been happy to be involved in that. And Larry, do you want to give an update of where that stands? We did cover that on our show probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, and of course it's a constantly changing topic, especially while the legislature is still in session in Florida. So do you just want to give us an update of where that stands today?
I don't have that in front of me. I posted that update that you set out, but I don't have it here.
Okay,
so,
well, that's no problem.
I can
give a quick update.
Yes.
You know, as you said, fingers crossed, things seem to be going well in terms of having that anchoring restriction not become law this year in Florida. And just as a recap, the restriction is on overnight anchoring within 200 feet of developed waterfront property. And that is the only part of that bill that we are opposed to. The rest has to do with safety and handling derelict vessels in Florida. But as of now, the Senate bill, which is the one that includes the restriction, still has to go through its third committee hearing, and that committee is not scheduled to meet again. The legislature has eight more days in this session. So it, at this point, is not scheduled to be addressed. And at that point, it would not, of course, reach the full legislature for a vote and therefore would not become law. So that's where it stands today. On the House side, their bill dealing with the same issues does not include the anchoring restriction. So fingers crossed that could change, and we're staying diligent for the next several days while the legislature is still in session. But it looks like that potentially that anchoring restriction will not become active. So that's good news for cruisers, loopers, and cruisers alike heading through Florida.
Yeah, terrific. I was going to say, too, that as we watched all of that take place and all of the updates and all the work that was being done by your team, it made us very proud to be one of your sponsors. That was it's really terrific what you did.
Well, I thank you for that. And
yeah. Well,
we've had a lot of sponsors step up on it. Salty Southeast Cruisers Net, of course, posted a lot of updates on a regular basis, which was so helpful in keeping the entire cruising community informed. So we thank you for that. And we had other sponsors like Waterway Guide who posted very frequently on the topic. And even some of our sponsors in Florida submitted written statements that we were able to use in contacting the legislators on the issue. So it's really been a team effort all over the boating community.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys really stepped up to the plate. That was nice. And while we're talking about saying thank yous, I wanted to publicly take a minute. With the death of Claiborne back in June, we were just set adrift. And folks like Chuck Baer and Susan Landry and Mark and Diana Doyle and Jim and Peg Healy and Mike Ahart of Waterway Guide, those folks really stepped up and helped us a lot keep things flowing. because it's a big job. I mean, Mike Ahart once told me that by Friday afternoon he's thoroughly exhausted trying to keep everything posted and keep things up to date. And those folks that I mentioned have been such a big help to me. And also John Kettlewell, who's, I think, up north now. But anyway, so I just want to say thank you to those folks for helping us out here.
I appreciate that. Those folks are mostly members of ours, and absolutely, we also would thank them, because the information that Salty Southeast Cruisers Guide or Cruisers Net publishes on a daily basis really helps loopers coming through this area. So, yes, absolutely. Thanks to that group of people. It was a shock to all of us. Claiborne's passing not quite a year yet. So it's great. And thanks to your efforts as well, Larry, that Claiborne's work has continued and the site has continued. So, and the publication. So we appreciate that. And thank you goes out to you too for making sure that happened.
Well, thank you. I hope everybody realizes that I came on in 2010 as a copy editor for Claiborne. I mean, he just needed my assistance to give him more free time to pursue other avenues. And I hope everybody understands that I absolutely do not have the encyclopedic knowledge that Claiborne has about the waterway. I rely on all the sources that come into us, and I rely on Google and all the other sources, pretty much like a cruiser would. A lot of times I see myself as a boater. How would I look at this, and how would I approach that, and where would I find this information? So, but Claiborne, I swear, you could ask him, what about such and such? And he'd say, oh, yeah, I was there and so. But unfortunately, I don't have that kind of wide range of knowledge. So I hope who has questions.
Well, what you're doing is working. And like I said, the boating community appreciates it, because compiling that information is important and is needed. And with that, let's kind of transition into today's topic. The loopers who are on the kind of seasonal schedule are moving into and through South Carolina at this point. So we want to talk a little bit about the ICW through this area.
Yep.
And one of the things I've been doing a lot is been out there talking to loopers. And since these are my home waters, hadn't really put the time to think about it. But people who are not from this southeast area, maybe have been lake boaters, are not as familiar with the tide, having to deal with the tidal changes as we are, and how that impacts their cruising and their anchoring. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? What are some of the characteristics of the ICW, and how do we handle things like tides if we're not used to that?
Right. Well, almost all of the anchorages that are close to the shore are going to have anywhere from a 6.5 to an 8-foot tide change, so that when they anchor, especially if they anchor at high tide, they've got to be aware of, if they read a depth off of the chart and they say, oh, that says 7 feet, then they might not have 7 feet when the tide goes down. So it's an issue all the time. And keeping a good, NOAA has a good tide website that they can go to, NOAA.gov/tide. And the University of South Carolina has a very good tide prediction chart that are all done. I mean, they're live. If you go to them right now, it shows you today's date and what the span of time involved with those tides would be, and then a long list of locations. The NOAA chart is set up a little more conveniently because it's aimed it has a section just for the Intercoastal Waterway. The University of South Carolina one is very, very thorough, but often you have to do a little bit of searching to find the location on that chart. But the information is there. The further inland that you go, I mean, once you get up into the Waccamaw River and all of that, there's not a great deal of tide change to be worried about. But close to the coast, you're going to have big tide change. And again, depending upon where the tide is and where it's going, in some areas you'll have quite a bit of current, so that an anchorage that looks free and sheltered for a moment. I mean, if you come in right at the change of tide, then it's going to be very calm. But as that tide begins to ebb, sometimes the current, that happens right here in Charleston in the Ashley River anchorage, where the tide changes. And as you drive over our bridges here, you can always tell exactly where the tide is because of the way the boats are headed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've got that tide working with them or against
okay.
them.
Okay. So any other things to be aware of with the tides besides anchoring? Any other concerns that people should have?
Obviously, there are places where the tide is critical in terms of whether you can go through a specific patch. There are spots where we have said, the problem areas where we have said mid to high tide only. I just got an email from Jim Healy this morning about Hellgate down in Georgia. And at low tide, it's 3 feet or less. So you've got to plan. I mean, going through there at mid to high tide is an absolute requirement if you draw, you know, more than 3 feet. And most cruisers do. South Carolina is interesting in terms of the intercoastal because it starts with, I mean, if you're coming north, you have to thread a needle on the very first few miles of the South Carolina intercoastal. You cross the Savannah. And you're in 41 feet of water, and all of a sudden you're in 6 feet of water, and it's in a little curving kind of channel that goes right into Fields Cut. And that's, you know, it gets its reputation sometimes because of these little spots like that. And that's certainly an area of concern. And we try to keep up with when a particular area has been dredged when it hasn't been. But even with dredging, everyone should be aware that with a good blow, a good storm that comes through, what has been yesterday might not be today. The Coast Guard's pretty good about keeping marks moved, and you have to always follow the marks and not your magenta line. We get more problems with folks trying to doggedly follow that magenta line, and it just, rather than trusting the markers that are there. And the other problem with so many like Fields Cut, there are no charted depths there, so that you have to, you know, you have to sort of assume what the depth might be and really keep an eye on your depth gauge.
Right. Having boated in this area, I know you really haven't boated here unless you've run aground. It happens. Any advice for people if or when that does happen?
Let's hope they're going slow and they hope that they are not at high tide when they run aground.
Right. Very good.
Yeah, I know when I was boating in the Chesapeake, I told everybody that I hit every low spot in the northern Chesapeake. Fortunately, almost always along, especially near inlets, you will have Towboat US or Sea Tow available. And they're generally, you know, Johnny on the spot in terms of coming to help you and assist
right.
you if you get into difficulties there. They are also good folks, if you're approaching an area that you have questions about, they're good folks to call and say, what's going on here, you know, at Lockwood Folly or whatever they're going through, because they will know if there's been an issue there.
Right. That's an excellent point. The other thing I like to tell people is that, you know, we do have a sandy kind of mucky bottom here, which is somewhat forgiving as far as damage to your boat goes if you do run aground.
Yeah.
Much different than if you're propting something in Georgian Bay and you're going to have dents. So it's not a horrible thing to run aground here in the South Carolina ICW at least. Any particular areas, since loopers are getting ready to come through this area now, any particular, you know, current hazards to navigation that, that we should be aware of?
Actually, we've had a pretty good year. It hasn't been as bad. The reports we've had have been pretty clear. We get reports from good depths in places. The Ashapu-Kusaw cut is one that is, has been notorious, and we had a lot of discussion for a while about taking an alternate route so that coming north, when you get to the cutoff, you go down to the Kumbahi Bank in St. Helena Sound and come back up the Kumbahi River. It's about 5 miles out of your way, but it, if you're, you know, you have a 5 foot depth draw, you might want to consider taking that alternate route. And the alternate route works fine as long as you don't have an outgoing tide and a wind from the east that would build up the swell in St. Helena Sound. But you're not in the sound for that long. Be sure that if anybody takes that, that they go all the way east around Kumbahi Bank and not try to cut across. Because the ebb there is about 2 knots tide. Other areas, the Isle of Palms, there's been around mile 460, there's been shoaling there, has been getting worse. And then south of McClellanville at 433, it's been, and there the tide range is only about 6 feet, so it's not, you don't have a lot of help with the tide. But it's been marked at less, back in November we had depths of less than 4 feet there at mile 433.
Okay.
But,
and
okay. Then of
well,
course everybody... Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
I was going to say everybody knows about the issues with the rock pile up in, you know, going into Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. There you have to just watch for oncoming traffic. That's the issue. If you have a big barge coming down the same time you're coming through, you really got to communicate with him about, because the channel area, safe channel area through that is narrow.
Okay. That's all very helpful information. We're going to pause for just a minute and hear from one of our sponsors, and then when we come back, we'll dive into some specifics on anchorages and marinas and things to see and do along the ICW in South Carolina. So back in just a minute.
What makes Pantaneous America's yacht insurance special? Pantaneous America provides coverage and flexibility without any hidden or implied warranties. Licensed in all 50 states, Pantaneous America offers unparalleled service through our international network of offices. Pantaneous America allows for extremely liberal navigational limits. Pantaneous America's experienced worldwide claims staff is there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. With no deductible for fire, lightning, and total loss claims, Pantaneous America is always by your side. Call or visit us today and ask about our special offers for Great Loop Cruisers. 914-381-2066. Pantaneous America is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Okay, Larry, so let's kind of talk from south, heading northward through South Carolina. Tell us what loopers or other cruisers should stop and see and do, and what are good places to stop.
Well, of course, you know, as you come above Fields Cut and you come into Calabogie Sound, then you come to Hilton Head. And that's a wonderful place. The Harbor Town has always been our favorite stop there. There's also Shelter Cove, and Windmill Harbor. So there's several different marinas there. We love Hilton. We love Harbor Town because of the bike paths. We carry our bikes with us when we cruise. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing, too, at Hilton Head is Broad Creek, which takes you up to Shelter Cove. But in Broad Creek, dolphins love to come and play and feed in there. So you can go up into Broad Creek and just drift and the dolphins would come right up to the boat. We had it once. Our girls were on the swim platform, practically feeding, not feeding them because we weren't supposed to, but practically petting them. You know, the dolphins mm-hmm. are very tame there.
Mm-hmm.
And then going on north of there, you get to Beaufort, and that, again, is a beautiful stop. We like to anchor. There are several anchorages, one south of the Beaufort waterfront marina. And there, Beaufort now has a mooring field that's just west of the Beaufort Town docks marina.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there is Factory Creek, which is on the north side of Ladies Island Bridge. That's a nice anchorage up in there. If you have a pet, we always had a dog with us, and so we were always looking for places to go ashore. They have there's a ramp and a dock right there in Factory Creek, so you can dinghy to that dock. And up in Factory Creek is Ladies Island Marina, which is another nice stop to go to.
Okay.
And above there, we get up to Charleston. And, of course, Charleston is Charleston. It has so many places, wonderful places to stop. Charleston City Marina, the Maritime Center, which is right at the end of Calhoun Street in town, and across the harbor to Patriots Point is another wonderful stopping spot. There aren't that many anchorages around Charleston. There's the large anchorage in front of the city marina in the Ashley River, and that's just as the Intercoastal comes into the Ashley River and turns to the north. The anchorage is then to the south, to the west of that area. And above Charleston is Georgetown. As everybody knows, Georgetown had a devastating fire, but they have worked really hard to rebuild and relocate, and they are very, very anxious always to have guests come in to stay. There is an anchorage right in front of the Harbor Walk area in Georgetown, and several marinas along their Harbor Walk marina. Then above Georgetown, you get into what is my favorite part of South Carolina Intercoastal, and that's the Waccamaw River. In the upper Waccamaw, you absolutely step back in time. You can pull into some of those side creeks, and you'll have a wonderful, calm, flat water anchorage that's just terrific. Plenty of depth, dark, deep waters. If you like that kind of solitude anchoring, you're bound to find it somewhere in the Waccamaw. Also, you can go up, upstream the Waccamaw to Conway. So there's city docks. There was this, I think that the markers, navigational aids in the upper Waccamaw to Conway have been removed, or at least they're not being maintained. But the depth is so good, and if you stay in the center of the river, you're not going to have a problem getting up to Conway. There's Bucksport Marina, which is just famous for its not only its plantation and its history, but also famous for its sausage, if anybody's a sausage eater. Going on north of Bucksport, you come then through the rock pile and you come to Myrtle Beach. Our favorite stop in Myrtle Beach was always Doc Holliday, simply because you have a pretty straight bicycle route from Doc Holliday's out to the beach, and that was always a fun stop for us. Above Myrtle Beach, there's a wonderful area, Coquina Harbor, north of Myrtle Beach, where there are several marinas there. It's a wonderful sheltered marina area. They have been noted always for good fuel prices. So that's a nice stop to make above Myrtle Beach. And then the last spot in South Carolina is Calabash Creek. But I just got an email saying that the anchorage right at the mouth of Calabash Creek has silted in so that you can't, according to this report, could not anchor there, which is really sad because that's a popular anchorage. And it's really on up in the creek. It's too narrow because the shrimp boats are coming and going in and out of that creek all the time, and you really can't anchor in that channel further on up the creek. But the sad thing about it is that there are two wonderful seafood restaurants up the creek. If you've got a dinghy and can ride up there, there's no tie-up for large boats up in there. But it's certainly it's worth a dinghy ride if you can get up in there.
Okay, great. Larry, what's the best way for cruisers to stay up to date on changing conditions in this area? Tell us how they can get your information on a regular basis.
Well, we have the homepage, which is updated daily, sometimes hourly. We keep things trying to get those coming in all the time. And then at the end of every week, we've been sending out a newsletter with this week's news in it. And we always start with any local notices that are there and hazards to navigation. We post the local notices weekly for the 7th and 5th District. And Jim Lee's note about Hell Gate, that goes right at the top of the list and will be there. The other quick place to check is Facebook. We have a space on Facebook, and those go up, again, as soon as they're posted on our homepage, they go right to the Facebook, and the link there takes you back to the full report. So that's to check always as to what we have that has come into us.
Okay, and your website is cruisersnet.net, correct?
That's right, cruisersnet.net. Okay. And on Facebook, it's also cruisersnet.
Okay, perfect. And, of course, Charleston is the home port for AGLCA as well. So as you're coming through, definitely let us know, cruisers, when you're in town. And if there's anything we can do to assist you while you're here, let us know. But I do have to warn you that the following week, the week of May 4th, is our spring rendezvous in Norfolk, Virginia. So for that week, the home port crew will not be here in Charleston. But Larry, I appreciate you filling us in on what we can expect cruising the ICW in South Carolina. As we said, the website for Salty Southeast Cruisers Net is cruisersnet.net. And if you're looking for more information about the Great Loop, our website is greatloop.org. Larry, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you spending some time filling us in.
You are very welcome, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Absolutely. Same out to you. And to our listeners, thank you for listening. Tune in again next week for another episode. Thanks so much. Have a good day.